This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's begin with the Week in Review, starting with what caused that deadly Back Bay blaze that killed two Boston firefighters.
We are confident in announcing that the cause of the fire was in fact due to welders working at the rear of the building.
Also this week, another Supreme Court ruling on campaign finance means more money in politics and big implications for political races around the region.
We need less money in politics, not more, and our Supreme Court is very naive to think this will not have any effect.
Plus, Attorney General Martha Coakley leads a bipartisan call for tougher domestic violence laws in the wake of the Jared Remy case.
The truth is that the circumstances surrounding Jennifer Martel's death are all too common.
And Big Poppy at the White House. Just an innocent picture or cynical marketing?
Oh, he wants to do a selfie.
Yes, sir.
Whereas Big Poppy said, ka-ching.
All those stories and more today with former state treasurer Shannon O'Brien. Good to have you, Shannon.
Thank you.
Also with us, former city councilor and mayoral candidate Mike Ross. Good to have you back, Mike.
Great to be back.
All right. Well, let's start with the somber news of the week, and that was the two funerals for two Boston firefighters, Michael Kennedy and Lieutenant Edward Walsh, who died battling that 9-alarm fire in Back Bay last week. Today, we learned that the fire was likely sparked by a welder working just next door to the building. Here's Assistant District Attorney Ed Zabin earlier today.
The evidence at this point suggests that the fire started as a result of sparks from a repair work, which included the installation of an iron handrail in the rear exterior of 296 Beacon Street, the adjacent building.
And fire officials say there was no fire detail present at the worksite and that no permit was pulled for the welding operation. So, Shannon, let's first start with you. What do you make of this latest revelation in what's really been a terrible week and a half for Boston firefighters?
Well, I mean, the latest revelation really is just the beginning of frankly, a series of lawsuits that are probably going to be filed in the wake of this tragedy. But I think it almost doesn't matter, I think, for a lot of the people why this fire happened. It's just what could be done perhaps in the future. I mean, I think a lot of us are still trying to figure out what happened, and I forget which firefighter it was, whether they were both trapped in there, but how could something like this be avoided? I mean, the story about whether or not the hose burned, or, you know what I mean? Those are the types of things that I think that a lot of us would like to understand.
Right. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, no question. This will be a wrongful death suit. This will be civil liability, and this will create a lot of questions around that. But Shannon's right. I mean, you know, this is two firefighters died. And early on in Mayor Marty Walsh's administration, he's now dealt with the funerals of two Boston firefighters. The last death on duty was in 2009. Mm. The real culprit that day, I think we can all remember, was the wind. Mm. You know, there were stories across the city of broken glass doors. But if you're a firefighter, you're thinking something different that day. And I think one of the articles, I think, in the Globe talked about one of the firefighters saying, I hope there's no fire today. Because on that windy
because
day.
Because it was so windy.
On that windy day, right. That becomes the real culprit of the fire.
Hmm. Well, let's move on to the big Supreme Court decision this week on campaign finance and how it will affect political races both across the country and closer to home. The High Court continued to dismantle Watergate-era limits on campaign spending, this time striking down limits on how much individuals can make in combined contributions to political campaigns. So the court majority equated free campaign spending with free speech. Critics like Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders expressed outrage.
If you go up to the average person and say, guess what? We have given you more freedom. Previously, you could only spend $125,000 in direct contributions to candidates. Now you have the freedom to spend $4 or $5 million. People will look at you like you are crazy. This is freedom for a handful of the wealthiest people in this country to undermine American democracy and to buy elections.
Strong words there from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Mike, how do you think this decision is going to play out? I mean, let's think about the looming Senate race in New Hampshire, presumably between Scott Brown and Jeanne Shaheen, for example.
It will just make Washington more dysfunctional, more not in touch with the rest of America. The reason why money goes into politics, it goes into lobbying, and it goes into federal elections is to get people to do things differently that they normally might not otherwise do. The people who are typically funding these massive PACs and these contributions are often people who have regulatory structures on top of them, and the threat of future regulatory structures in front of them. You don't hear this kind of breakdown in democracy in local government or in state government in here in Massachusetts, here in Boston. I mean, look, we have our moments, right? Mm-hmm. But it generally works. And this notion that Washington is broken, I truly believe it comes from the amount of money that's being pumped into Washington, and I think it's only gotten worse.
Shannon, do you agree with that? Because another point of view would be money in politics is sort of like water running down a hill. It's going to find its way in sooner or later.
Yes and no. I mean, there was a reason that the 1976 court decision, Buckley versus Valea, which basically has been almost completely overturned, it was put in place in the wake of Watergate uh-huh. corruption, and corruption was balanced versus free speech rights. And in this decision, Justice Roberts basically said that corrupt, almost like that is not something that we are weighing anymore, that First Amendment rights trump everything. And literally, and I wrote this down when I was taking notes and sort of looking at this, and he said, and he didn't use the word okay, those are my notes, but to garner more influence and access to parties and influence over individual legislators, that's okay.
Hmm.
And to me, I just can't even understand how they could not even look at the issue of corruption. I mean, again, they looked at it, and I'm oversimplifying it, but that you would not understand how this will ultimately corrupt the system, and how this also could basically further potentially cloud where monies are going to be coming from. I mean, Citizens United case, that was allowed corporations to put limitless amounts into campaigns. Now it just makes it that much easier to just have few people really influence the elections across the country.
Well, I'm curious about this, and let me ask you both really quickly, just in the minute or so that remains. I mean, you mentioned Watergate era laws that control campaign spending. There was an impetus for this around the year 2000. You had people even like John McCain teaming up with Russ Feingold talking about campaign reform. Where is that impetus? It doesn't seem to be there anymore. There don't seem to be politicians responding to this, is what I'm saying. Mike?
It's this, the Citizens United, now this Supreme Court decision is empowering the changes to make it easier to get money into Washington. And, there is a willing audience on both sides, Democrat and Republican. I would think it may bear out more in favor of the Republicans, but both sides to get as much money as possible into federal elections.
And well, this has undercut the legislative attempts by both the House and the Senate down in Washington. Right. The Supreme Court has overruled those attempts to get at just what you're talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we return, we'll continue with our Week in Review with Mike Ross and Shannon O'Brien. Still to come, was Big Poppy's selfie with the president just an innocent picture or something else? I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And let's continue now with our Week in Review with Mike Ross, former city councilor, and Shannon O'Brien, former state treasurer. And Mike and Shannon, let's turn to another big piece of news out of Beacon Hill, and that is a new push to combat domestic violence, because this week we heard House Speaker Robert DeLeo is sponsoring legislation that would significantly strengthen the state's domestic violence laws by toughening penalties, making strangulation a felony, and educating judges and prosecutors about domestic violence. And DeLeo said it was the murder of Jennifer Martell, allegedly by Jared Remy, son of Red Sox announcer Jerry Remy, that provided the impetus for this bill.
This bill was born out of a tragedy. Following a shocking crime, I didn't know how I could just sit back as a speaker, a father, a man, and not do everything I could to stop such senseless acts of violence.
So, Shannon, you hear the passion and the will there of Speaker DeLeo, but do you think this is the right impetus for strengthening the state's domestic violence laws?
I certainly think that this is one of those things that captures the attention of legislators, and I think that it has some very good things in the bill. I do think that, first of all, one of the most important things that I saw in the bill is the education, because having had a little bit of experience, I did a lot of work when I was in the legislature around child abuse and worked with a lot of the battered women's groups on the way that we structured a piece of legislation that was to get children out of harm's way, but we actually had opposition from battered women's groups. So I think that the training and the understanding of the intricacies of how these relationships work, what it means within the court system, is very important. I also think that making sure that prior records, including restraining orders, are available to judges, that is very important. The defense bar, and I'm a former defense attorney a long time ago, I think I was for about 4 minutes, but the defense bar is pushing back on the holding of the accused for 6 to 8 hours.
After they post bail.
Yeah, after they post bail. And I think that you're a better lawyer than I am, Mr. Attorney Ross, because I do think that there are some constitutional issues that they're going to have to address when you have someone who's not convicted who will be held in jail without conviction. They're going to have to kind of take a look at that for a little bit longer, I think.
So, Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
I was also about a 4 minute defense attorney as well.
Actually, I went to BU Law and I did a lot when I was a student, but when I actually came to practicing and getting paid, I never did that.
Yeah, I did some of the same. But I think, first of all, you can understand politically how this happened. You can even substantively, as Shannon's just gone through, there are some good parts to this. The problem is that when the legislature steps in and tries to create law to fix what's broken in quotes in the judicial system, usually horrible results occur. We've seen this with the three strikes laws that sent much of America to prison. And we are now watching, this is now a presidential issue, unraveling the, a few drug arrests, putting people in jail for decades.
Hey, Mike, but let me just jump in here, and because I completely take your point. In fact, we spoke with a defense attorney earlier this week who made essentially the same point. And looking back at the Jared Remy case, I mean, there's been a lot of reporting about how it seemed like the body of law was okay. It was just it wasn't necessarily applied well.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, I mean, if this case brings that problem to the fore, what other option?
Look,
what better option is there than legislation?
Fine. Put the laws in place. But it's as you said, the problem is that there were laws in place that weren't used. And the prosecutor said as much, that they didn't ask for bail. They didn't have just basic fundamental things that you do in criminal court weren't done here. So fine, you can pass new laws and some of them will work and maybe some of them will be used. But that's not, I don't think, the way to do it. The way to do it is to have good judges, good prosecutors, and a good system of law.
And training and understanding what is happening, understanding when you have these sort of sensitive issues, and understanding how they sometimes can be misapplied on both sides. I mean, and that's ultimately what I think is. I think that this is a good first step. I think that there's going to be debate around this. I think they're going to be looking at the constitutional issues. But most importantly, and this is a sad thing, we need to put more money into something like this. We need to be putting more money into helping these women find alternatives. I mean, that I think is the most important thing.
So let's move on, and we should mention what is happening on this day right down the road from us at Fenway Park right now. The Red Sox are playing the Milwaukee Brewers. It's this brand new season's home opener, and if you're interested, bottom of the fourth, 2-2, Milwaukee-Boston. But of course, the big news in Boston this week was all about the Red Sox at the White House, where they were honored for last season's World Series victory. And then the team, with slugger David Ortiz, posed with the president, and you know what happened next.
All right, come on. Let's get a good picture here.
Yeah.
Come on.
Actually, do you mind if I take my own?
Oh, he wants to do a selfie.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's the Big Poppy selfie. Come on.
Cha-ching.
Got him. Yeah.
Cha-ching, you heard it. So that picture of Big Poppy and Obama went viral. Mike Ross, we learned that David Ortiz had signed a deal with Samsung before taking the selfie with the president. A lot of brouhaha ensued. The White House was not amused. What do you make of this? Does this cheapen the event, or was it just good
first
fun?
Of all, David Ortiz can do or say anything, and we love him the more and he does it. And maybe it's just because we're from Boston and we're Boston fans, but I just love that guy. Look, this is the new normal. This is how advertising is going to have to function. It is going to have to find ways into the psyche that are no longer on your traditional commercial. There are no commercials anymore. There are no everything's different. There's, I'm going to be writing a piece.
There are no commercials, or everything is now a commercial.
Well, everything's a commercial. There's this, I'm writing a piece in the Globe that will be coming out this week about that first kiss video. Did you hear about this? Turned out to be an advertisement for women's clothing, but it was like 20 strangers. They all kissed each other. Well, two at a time. And, you have to see it. Google it. But, I mean,
it
what's amazing.
It would have been a very large set of pants if they were, all.
Yeah, it would have been. 75 million hits on this thing, and it winds up being a commercial. That's the new normal, really getting to people in other ways.
Shannon, how did you respond?
Well, and it's my understanding that Samsung is sponsoring something for the entire Red Sox today at opening day. So it may not just have been Mr. Ortiz who was doing this. But you know what? What difference does it make if it's a Samsung phone and a telephoto? Everything is now in the public realm. I think the president, appropriately, in his office appropriately, has stepped in when they felt that sometimes his image was, being misappropriated. But it is what it is. That's in the public realm. You're not going to be able to do much about that.
Well, it's a pretty good picture. It came out of this whole brouhaha. That's sort of my only judgment. Listen, we've got just enough time very quickly for two hubbubs here. That story that sort of didn't make it above the fold. Michael, what's your hubbub for this week?
Well, this being opening day in Fenway Park, we also have Boston Magazine did a great piece, Eric Randall, yesterday, that we're also the most expensive ticket in town now. Now, if you factor in how much everyone makes by region, we're actually in third place. But on straight ticket number, our championship last year, Red Sox, we've now been able to increase the prices to a point where we've just taken over the Yankees. So we're now the most expensive ticket. They have a whole index that they look at to determine these things, the price of concessions and those things and tickets, and we are the most expensive in the country.
I'd say that's the number one not to be proud of.
Shannon, your hubbub.
My hubbub, and it's sort of in keeping with the presidential selfies theme, I was watching the Today Show, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but President George Bush is now painting pictures of world leaders, Putin and Tony Blair and others. And he's not painting selfies of himself in the shower anymore. I think that's good news. That's, again, I don't know if that was above or below the fold, but I just thought the analogy was important
way
to
below
me.
The fold. No, that's a good one. Former state treasurer, former gubernatorial candidate Shannon O'Brien, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. And former city councilor and former mayoral candidate Mike Ross, same to you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, stick with us because up next we'll hear from vocal supergroup Pentatonix. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. Stay with us.